Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. I had a really fun weekend and a really fun day yesterday.
Cool.
Well,
okay.
So on Saturday, we actually went to see The Boss Baby.
I saw that.
And we were the only adults with no children next to us.
I was thinking that as you were saying that kind of picture.
Oh, had a massive tub of popcorn, felt like a child, laughed like crazy, was so silly.
It was cute, right?
So adorable.
Yeah,
I thought
really
it was so adorable. And so we had fun doing that. Had a stomach ache after all that popcorn. That was like, don't eat popcorn when you're really hungry. Because then it's like, it's so addictive, the salt.
Yes.
It's like, more, more, more. I felt like a seven-year-old shoveling in.
Like my kids.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then on Sunday, we went to see this adorable play that's in a local theater near our house. And it's called Social Security.
Okay.
Hysterical.
Oh, really?
It's like three generations. And it's all centered. It's very simple.
You know,
it's basically centered in a New York apartment with these art dealers who are married and about her sister and their mother and what to do with her. And she's, you know, 80 years old and put her in a home, not put her in a home. It was hysterical.
Oh, that's good.
It was so hysterical. And
that's nice.
The sister's daughter, who was possibly a sex addict. I mean, it was just...
Oh, that's cool.
It was very, very, very well done. And then, to top it all off, it was amazing yesterday. So my neighbors my former neighbors who moved to Colorado, they were going to sell their house now, so they had been rented out. So they came down for this weekend. They drove from Colorado. They're here, and then they're going off to Hawaii. But the three little girls who used to come to my house all the time, I miss them so much. It's been 2 years to come pick roses and hang out with me and play with the cats. So I had all three of them, and I took them to Color Me Mine yesterday.
Oh, my God. That is so adorable.
So much fun. They're so adorable. But they're older now.
I was thinking that.
They're 7 and 11 and going to be 14.
Oh, my. But the bond's still there.
The bond is still there. It's
so
just
sweet.
Delightful. So how about you?
Well, so my little one is sick with an ear infection. So on Saturday, I was going to go to a friend's 40th birthday party. So I had to cancel
that.
Right.
You still have friends who are
exactly
40,
yeah.
Right? You're not even there yet.
No, thank God. I'm staying. I'm holding on to these 6 months or whatever as long as I can. But yeah, so I had to cancel that. But then on Sunday, it was great. We went to a comedy night for my son's school, but because we're in Studio City, we get like really good comics. I mean, I was crying.
Really?
It was so funny. Yeah.
Oh, neat.
So I love comedy shows. Love.
Nothing like a good laugh. I swear to God, you can be down and out and just have that good belly laugh. And it's
so
just
healing.
It lasts for a long time, too.
Yes.
I'd love to laugh.
Yeah.
I wish I could. I want to laugh more.
I'll make you laugh.
That's my sick witch laugh. Well, last week we had our show. We were fantastic. We had great guests.
Oh,
Kelly,
you and I.
And
I was
Dr.
like,
Deborah.
I like blanked. I was like, who was on last week? Yes, it was us. I totally forgot about that in our depression talk. Yeah, it went really quick. I felt like that hour flew by.
Yes, absolutely. So if you missed that show, take a listen because we do have some good tips and ideas and concepts about depression and how to heal from it. Yeah. Okay, so you found this guest today.
Yes, I'm so excited. Okay, so today there's an author named Fumio Sasaki, and he wrote a book called Goodbye Things about the minimalist movement. And so I was so intrigued. I saw this book and contacted the editor. So we're going to talk with him because Fumio is in Japan, and it's like, I think, 3 or 4 in the morning there.
And doesn't speak English.
Exactly.
I understand. Yes.
That's the second part. So, yeah, so we're going to have the editor, Jeff Shreve. I think I'm saying that right, in his place. And so a little bit about Fumio. He lives in a 215 square foot apartment in Tokyo, furnished with a small wooden box, a desk, and a roll-up futon pad. He owns a total of about 150 items, which includes everything from clothes, futon, toothbrush, to bottles of condiments in the kitchen. Goodbye Things was published in Japan in 2015 and has sold over 150,000 copies. Jeff Shreve is an editor at W.W. Norton & Company, specializing in science, technology, and health books. He lives in Brooklyn with his wife, and about half of the possessions they had before reading Fumio Sasaki's Goodbye Things. Welcome, Jeff.
Welcome.
Thanks, Dr. Deborah. Thanks, Kelly. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
Absolutely. We're very excited. So, you know, where do we even start? I love this book. We'll just talk about that for a minute because there's these beautiful pictures that we get to actually see how Fumio lives. Do you want to tell us a little bit, though, because I guess his work is based on Marie Kondo's The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. Can you tell us a little bit about what separates good things from her work?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, certainly Marie Kondo was one of his big inspirations. I mean, she obviously is a huge presence in Japan and now around the world as well. So he certainly was introduced to this sort of decluttering movement after he read her book. And he had been inspired by a few other things as well. There are kind of a few other reasons that led him to start exploring minimalism, and Marie Kondo was certainly a big one. Another one, interestingly, was the 2011 earthquake in Japan. And many people there were injured or even killed by their own possessions as they came toppling down during the earthquake. So there's this idea that having too many possessions could actually harm you. And then for him as well, it was the rise of technology that made it possible to live much more minimally. You know, if you think of all the things that your smartphone can do, I mean, certainly my iPhone, for example, can, you know, it's a TV, it's a stereo, it's a music and movie collection, it's a calendar, a map, you know, so on. And so those were the kind of, those were the things that were in his mind as he started to write about his own experiences. But his message departs from Marie Kondo in a few ways, and my wife and I actually did Marie Kondo's KonMari method a few years back. We read the book when it came out here in the U.S. And we really loved it, and we enjoyed the process. You know, it took about 4 or 5 months, and we ended up with a much tidier apartment, of course. But it was the KonMari method, at least to us, felt more like an exercise in sort of filtering and maybe an exercise in organization, you might call it. You know, you discard everything that you don't enjoy. You know, anything that, in her words, anything that doesn't spark joy, you get rid of. The Sasaki's advice in Goodbye Things goes a little deeper than that, because one of the big messages in Goodbye Things is that many of the possessions that we have or we hold on to, we have because we want to project a certain image about ourselves.
So true.
And that image isn't always true to who we actually are. One of Sasaki's examples in the book is he had this, first of all, he had way too many things. If you look at the photos, you can kind of get a sense for what he had crammed into his apartment. But he had all sorts of vintage cameras that he would buy at auction, often for a lot of money. And for a while, he actually tried to set up a little dark room. He basically took half of his kitchen, which in Tokyo was probably already pretty small, and he actually turned it into a dark room. And this was because he wanted to be seen as a sort of interesting photographer type. But as he says, he didn't use half of those cameras. They kind of sat on his shelf and collected dust. And for myself, I studied music in college, and so in my apartment, I had a digital piano, I had a trumpet, I had a big sheet music collection. I had a separate desktop computer that was dedicated entirely to home recording. But at the time I was reading his book, I hadn't picked up that trumpet probably in maybe 3 years. The piano was longer than that. But I'd wanted to keep this image, you know, of myself as a musician, you know, as someone who had studied music, who wrote music. And so gave up a lot of space in my apartment to that image. And so, while, for example, the trumpet I had certainly sparked joy, you know, when we did the Marie Kondo method, I held on to the trumpet. You know, it was my uncle's. I'd had it since fifth grade. You know, I had many fond memories of it. But with Saki's book, he asks you to think about your possessions in a sort of deeper manner. You know, he asks if they are essential, if you are using them, and if, you know, if they're true to who you are, because one of his big points is that often you take up a lot of space in your home with objects that are there to sort of project who you want people to see you as. Mm-hmm. So the minimizing process, as we went through Sasaki's book, actually was more thinking about yourself than thinking about the things in your apartment. So it was pretty intense, certain, especially when you got down to those last objects, you know, the ones that had real sentimental value. But so that was the difference for us, and I think that's sort of the difference in Sasaki's message, is that it's maybe another step down the path of thinking intentionally about what you own, what you have in your home.
So basically what you end up with is that which really represents more accurately your authentic, true inner self, as opposed to the image that you want to portray to other people.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's the plan, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to share a little bit of my own experience, because I went through my own version of that years ago. I was in I was in college, and I lived in an apartment, and it was very cluttered. I had moved from a condominium that I shared roommates with, and I had a lot of my parents hand me down furniture that they didn't want anymore, that was very big, mm-hmm. very big for a very small space. And I had my cats and a big bed and all this stuff, and I never felt comfortable with it, but I felt I didn't have the resources or money to go buy other things or to really reflect what my style was, because I didn't know what it was. So the apartment I was living in, they were selling it out for condo refurbishments, so they were going to kick us all out. So I had to find this other small space, and everything was so expensive. So I found this really tiny little space, and I thought, I'm not going to take all this stuff with me. I don't care if my parents are have hurt feelings. I don't like it. I hate it. I'll give it away or send it garage sales. And so I moved into this apartment, and I kept literally a tiny little coffee table. Mm-hmm. I got two beanbag chairs. I took my piano. I took a mattress, and I just lived out of cardboard boxes got rid of most of my things. And it was awesome.
Yeah.
I let the heater, heater broke down, so I didn't fix the heater either.
Wow.
I didn't want anybody to come over, because I just wanted my space to just be for me to have the freedom to figure out what is it that I actually like.
Uh-huh.
I've always lived with other people telling me what I should like or what I should have.
Sure.
And ever since then, I cannot stand clutter.
Me too.
I can't stand things on my countertops, mm-hmm. because it's terrible for dusting, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You have to move everything.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I always feel like I'm the opposite of a hoarder. Hoarders really fascinate me, because I'm like, I don't know how you possibly can live. Because to me, clutter gets me anxious. I can't think. I feel like I like my space. It's like I'm very feng shui in that way, too. I like that openness.
I could see that about you.
Right? Yeah. But it's fine. But some people really... doesn't bother them. Like my dad's desk, if you go in there, it's like a tornado. I mean, and it's like he can still work. It's fine. So
that's what it looks like. Fumio's original,
yes,
as a maximalist,
exactly.
space was very cluttered.
Yeah.
Very cluttered.
Goodness,
yeah.
What a transition. So Jeff, tell us about your own personal growth in that process when you went through both methods, and you know, what did you take away from that in terms of, you know, yourself and your image and all that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a work in progress. Absolutely. I think for Sasaki, he says it took him 5 years. So that math, I think I have another 4 years to go. But it really was. It got started with Marie Kondo, because the one thing she does, which is really great, is her process makes you think actively about every object that you own,
mm-hmm.
Can be a really good exercise, because a lot of the stuff we accumulate almost automatically.
Yeah.
And, you know, during that process, I took things out of storage that I didn't even know I had. And so that was, that sort of got me started down the path. And certainly as we've taken the next step in our home, with this sort of minimizing process, based off of the book, there's been more of a change in how we live because our apartment has become more of a sanctuary. You know, it's visually much quieter. Sasaki has this concept in the book that he calls the silent to-do list. And that is, he talks about the way that your brain interacts with its environment. And he says, you know, your brain is also, when it is taking in stimuli and responding to it continually. And you usually don't have much of a say in it. And so his examples are if you look at a stack of books on your nightstand and your brain says, oh, that's right, you're supposed to start reading those. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in my case, I look at this piano taking up, you know, a fourth of our living room and my brain says, oh, you haven't played that in X number of years or months, so, you know, it's time, you really should be practicing. Mm-hmm. And that happens as you just look at things in your home. And that's been pretty interesting because I read that and I thought, you know, I read that before we had done the process and I said, well, that sounds like it makes sense. I'm not entirely convinced that mm-hmm. there will actually be some sort of change in my experience at home. But it really has been the case that when I go home now, it's a much more peaceful place. Mm-hmm. I can sit down. I can lay down in our living room because there's just that much space there now. And there's you know, nothing that I look at is telling me to do anything. Mm-hmm. So it's become a much quieter home and
kind of in sync with your spirit. It's
allowed
me
to focus on whatever I'm working on, you know, or whatever I want to think about. So that's been really great. And that's really, Sasaki actually thinks of minimalism as sort of a first step to developing yourself. He thinks of it as a way to strip out the distractions from your life. But that's step one or even step zero, because once those distractions are out of the way, now it's time for you to figure out what you want to do, and you know who you actually are. And so that's been sort of the next step after you kind of get, I've gotten to this quieter, more focused place, is to think about, you know, what will I be doing now?
So I guess for the people out there who maybe are not familiar with this concept, is it just this idea that we should really hold on to just what we need? I mean, is that really, how would you kind of give it one sentence?
Yeah, I think I'm trying to remember Sasaki's exact phrasing. I believe it's basically getting to the minimum that you need to be happy.
Mm.
And there's no sort of, there's no benchmark number of items, you know, size of your living space or anything like that. If you have a whole house worth of possessions that you have deep connections to, that you mm-hmm. use or interact with regularly, that is still minimalism to him. To him, it's about stripping away everything that's not essential to you. And if that leaves you with 150 items, that's great. If it leaves you with 150,000 items, that to him is still minimalism.
Wow. There's this piece in the book that I just love. It says, and I didn't even realize this, but it seems so true, the joy of victory only lasts 3 hours.
Mm,
whereas the agony of defeat lasts much longer.
Uh-huh.
So we're always running after that high of something, right? Oh, we just won this, or I got this, or I acquired this. Mm-hmm. But that's so true. How long does somebody still stay in that bliss of loving whatever?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, that's old, that's tired.
Mm-hmm.
On
yeah.
to the next.
Well, I'm thinking this as I'm thinking about my
your
compulsive
kids?
Shopping habit.
Oh.
that's what I'm thinking about, because I'm thinking about, hey, you know, I was looking at his closet, and I was like, oh, my God, I want to do that. And then my first one was like, I could never do that. Like, it brings me such joy to go shopping and get things. But exactly what you're saying, it's like that high for a little while. It's like, oh, yeah, I got this new thing. And then a couple days later, oh, I would love to get something else new. And it's like, yeah, it's just this idea of newness and discovery and adventure. But it really, the object itself really doesn't have any, hold any meaning.
No staying power, right?
Right.
I've been doing a new little challenge for myself that when I want to get something, I sort of ask, what value is it going to have to me in next week?
Oh.
Is it going to have the same value next week? And then I ask, what value will it have to me in 6 months from now? It's not going to have any value. And that's actually based on my daughter telling me once when I was being an overactive drama queen in the kitchen. And she said, Mom, is that really going to bother you 5 minutes from now?
Oh, my God. She was brilliant a teenager. Soul.
She says, really, Mom, is that really going to bother you in 5 minutes? I'm like, probably not. Thanks, sweetie.
Yeah. Moving on. That's hilarious. But, you know, it's so funny. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Jeff.
And Sasaki, before he became a minimalist, he loves things. He still says that he's a minimalist who loves things. And he had photos. There were some photos that didn't make it into the book of his workspace at his office. And it was a photo of his office chair, and it was stacked about 5 feet up with new boxes from Amazon, from things that he'd ordered. And he called it his Amazon tower, which was just that sort of effect made concrete, this idea that you're always chasing that high of the next box coming in from Amazon or mm-hmm. or from wherever else. Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
So I want to tell a little bit of our readers. First of all, this book is fantastic. It's called Goodbye Things, just in case you just tuned in, by Fumio Sasaki. And he kind of goes through a list of really great ways to start this journey of becoming a minimalist. And I really like this. Number 34, he says, if you lost it, would you buy it again? And it's a really great way to gauge your passion for the object. It's like, yeah, if you want to buy it again, you know what? Then you know, like, yeah, this is it. You know, I need this, or this brings me a lot of joy. And then it's true. If the answer is no, it's like, I guess you have to question, why are you hanging on to it?
But I have to say, number 50 is going to piss off a lot of Jews. Oh. Don't buy it because it's cheap. Don't take it because it's free. Are you kidding? Every message that we get growing up is, it's cheap.
True.
It's on sale. It's not on sale. You can't have it.
We're both Jewish. But
I love it.
It's so true. But I think there is. I think we're also conditioned that if it's on sale, it's like, grab it while it's, you know.
I can't tell you how many things historically I have left in my closet because it was $5.
Yes.
And I never wore it.
Exactly.
You know? It's
right.
Like, it's a $5 schmata. What do I need it for?
Right. It's so true. Very, very, very interesting. Well, and I think also to me, and this is where I think our therapy can come into play, is like, I guess the deeper question is, why do people hold on to things? I mean, you know, my husband's dad really holds on to a lot of objects, and you know, for him, there's something about throwing it away that feels very destructive, or I don't know, just very painful. So it's really interesting that there's you know, that message for people who really hold on to things. What is that about? What are you afraid to let go of? You know, what are you scared to replace? Or I don't know. So there's such a deeper message, I think, in a lot of this too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the personal items, the items of sentimental value that are absolutely the sort of the hardest ones to even thinking about getting rid of them can trigger the sort of guilty reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a tip in the book called discarding. Memorabilia is not the same as discarding memories.
Mm.
Yeah, and often we sort of equate, we infuse the objects with those memories, or with, you know, we put the value of our relationship with people into items that they've given us,
mm-hmm.
and that can make it really tough to get rid of those things. Certainly for me, my trumpet, which was passed on to me from my uncle after he had passed away, and it was probably 50 years old or so. We had fixed it up kind of countless times. It was still working. but I wasn't using it. And at first I didn't know what I was going to do with this, because I just could not fathom that this trumpet going to someone else, going outside of the family. And I kept it, I think, till towards the very end of our sort of minimizing process, and then realized that it was doing no good sitting above my closet gathering dust. You know, I had been given this trumpet as a kid, and there was certainly going to be some kid out there that could use this trumpet. And it was just kind of sitting there, you know, unused. And so I had a conversation with my mother and my grandmother and my older sister, and said, you know, this is where my head is at with my uncle's trumpet, and I can give it back to you, Grandma. I can give it back to you, Mom. But I'm just not using it, and someone should get use out of this. Mm-hmm. And we actually had a really wonderful conversation about, the impact the trumpet had had on my life growing up, the impact that my uncle had had on our lives growing up. And I don't think that's a conversation we would have had if I had that trumpet, you know, in some monthly storage place and wasn't thinking about it, in that way, in the way that I had to when it was time to give it to someone else.
It really made the memories real in that conversation. How beautiful.
Yeah.
Mm. I love thinking about, too, like if we're holding on to an object and then recognizing, okay, but it's just sitting in my house and it can actually be put to good use for somebody else. So I like that you said that. It's like, okay, somebody else could be learning to play the trumpet or using this rather than me just holding on to it.
And Kelly, back to your statement about hoarding and hoarders and all that kind of stuff. I was actually flown up to Canada to audition for the hoarding show, and they actually offered it to me, but I just couldn't imagine going to someone's house with 75 cats and wanting to puke. And they said, you probably will throw up when you walk in.
Oh my God.
But what I learned, because in the audition and stuff, and they really gave some really good examples of the kinds of people that I would be working with, and what was the through line for almost all of them was that these objects were a replacement for people, that they were unfulfilled in terms of their relationships, and they didn't have an attachment to themselves. And I think that's a key of, you know, that not having a positive self-worth and positive self-image and looking toward other people to always fulfill that. And if somebody did do that and then they're gone, then all those things associated with them becomes that much more precious, because
sense.
They're not, and that the therapy was really about helping the person identify their own internal value so that they could let go of the connection to some of those things. It was very profound.
So interesting. You know, we have a family friend that was a hoarder, and we hired a professional organizer to work with him, and that was super helpful. But I always feel like, what'd you say?
He allowed it?
Yeah, he allowed it. But I always feel like the organizer should come with like a therapist on the side, because clearly like there's a lot going on. But I highly recommend that, because I think sometimes family wants to help, but it's almost like you're too attached to the situation. I mean, it was kind of nice to have somebody else come in and sort of, she was the neutral party and kind of, you know, and then they know how to deal with this specifically. So super
family
helpful.
Members are often very angry. They're already angry at the hoarder, and so the hoarder senses that and does not want to. Mm-hmm. They just feel like the family's being vindictive or hostile, and they hold on to the things even more.
True.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what was the trumpet the hardest item for you to get rid of, Jeff? Let go of, I should say, because you did not.
Absolutely.
And what was your?
Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you also, and what was your wife's hardest one, if you're allowed to disclose?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure I know. I'd have to ask her. I think I would have to check in. That's a good question to ask her, actually. I imagine it was something quite similar. I mean, she has also had we had in storage things from both of our childhoods. I should check in with her and find out.
Interesting.
Now, the other thing, which wasn't hard to get rid of, but more sort of revealing in terms of how I thought about the things I owned, were our books. And I think that was also a big one for Sasaki, because he worked in book publishing in Tokyo, and a lot of his self-image was tied up in his book collection, which was the case for me. I mean, there was a part of my bookshelf which was entirely books that I had worked on here at W.W. Norton, at the book publisher. Mm-hmm. And these are books that I'd edited. I had read them multiple times. I was not going to be reading these books. I had copies of them here in the workplace. It was, there was no reason for them to be in my apartment, except that I clearly was waiting for some guest to come visit and say, oh, that book looks interesting, and then give me a chance to brag, I worked on that book. I worked on all these books. And that was interesting because they were taking up a lot of space in our apartment. And it was, you know, they were there for this sort of hypothetical, you know, stroking of my ego down the line. So that was pretty revealing to realize that I was building this collection of books for no other reason than that.
What's interesting is as you're talking, I'm thinking about my kids, how I think it's so important to introduce this concept when they're young. I mean, I think it's really hard for my kids to, especially my older one, to get rid of things and to pass it on. It's really, really hard for him. And I don't know if it's this idea that, but wait, I know I haven't played with that, but I will now, or I will want to. And what if I don't get that missed opportunity?
I always thought it was a good practice with kids that when you're getting them, they want something new, that you actually invite them to get rid of something old. Right?
Yes.
If you want that, that's awesome. Happy to get that for you. So what are you going to give away to somebody else to pay it forward?
Yes.
Right? Kids don't necessarily like that, but I think they learn a lot from it.
It's true. I totally
agree. Yeah, that's a good suggestion.
I am so curious, Jeff, and if this is too personal, please feel free to not answer, but how did this, you did this with your wife, so how did it change your relationship, if at all?
I think it gave us a shared project, which I think actually helped our relationship quite a bit. It was, I mean, our collaboration on Minimizing was very easy because we both have a similar personality. My wife was actually the first, she actually read Sasaki's book in the original Japanese and then told me about it over and over until I realized I should sign up the English rights and publish it here in the U.S. So there was no situation where one of us was trying to drag the other along to go through the process.
Oh, so she speaks Japanese?
She is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. So she was, So was it more her who was idea this was, or was it just mutual?
Oh, no, she's the genius. She's the genius behind the U.S. edition. The title was her idea. The English title was her idea, that is, and she's been, she's the secret genius behind everything.
First of all, I have to tell you, I love the title and I love the photo on the book. Like, I almost think this is the most ironic thing. I'm thinking, God, I would love to put this on a coffee table. It's so beautiful and you know, I don't know. I absolutely love the design. So I have to tell you that.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, the it's interesting. The Japanese edition has those photos at the front of the book. It starts with those photos. And in the U.S., we don't, at least in my experience, we don't usually put a photo insert at the front of the book.
You're right. No.
And during the production process, I was asked where I wanted the photo insert to be, and I said, well, you know, I'd never thought about it before. I actually like this photo insert right at the front. It kind of gets you with these series of photos, of beautiful photos of people's clean apartments and homes. And so we kept it there, and I really like how it turned out.
Yeah, it's so engaging when you see photos up front because it just, you know, a picture says 1,000 words.
It's true. Well, right? I think it's also inspiring because I'm looking and I'm like, oh, I could do that. Like, it's almost like they've embedded a part of me. It's like, oh, yeah, if they can do it, I can do it. So I think it's really inspiring. Yeah, looks great. I mean, I like that look anyway. I mean, it's sort of funny. Like, to me, that type of style looks the most aesthetically pleasing. You know, I don't know. I just think it looks really great because you can really just focus on those few objects. And I just think it looks great. Like, I get lost when I, go somewhere. There's too much. Like I can't focus. So I really, yeah, mm-hmm.
It's
like
interesting because there's so many stereotypes out there. Like having a minimalist would be considered or called sterile by some people,
oh,
right? Oh, it's so
yeah.
sterile. We have mm-hmm. to make this warm. Even designers don't like things a lot of times
That's
that are too
point.
Barren, mm-hmm. even though it creates space for you to actually be. But,
right.
you know, it's like, oh, it's out there. I guess there's, for some people, it's just a turnoff mm-hmm. to think that way. It's like, oh, that's
yeah.
not homey. That doesn't feel like home. But there should be, like, you
that's
know,
a good point.
Little wraparound things everywhere.
Yeah.
And it should be snuggly and all that. So it's an interesting thing. I'm sure some people are quite resistant to the concept because they don't really see it as having a positive benefit. But, boy, I think mm-hmm. it's awesome.
Mm.
We did our...
Yeah, and in our living room, we... We cleared out a lot of furniture, but one of the things, perhaps the only thing we added, was a giant fuzzy area rug just in the center, which we never would have been able to fit in before. And so it may have been a reaction to the idea. You get everything out of there, and all of a sudden it feels a little too sterile. But
yeah.
It certainly has done the trick, and so you get this sort of clean looking space, but still feels warm.
Well, that's nice. Yeah. When we redid our floors at the house and I had to take everything off the shelves because they had to move the furniture around, they're still in the boxes. Now I have to get myself to go and look through them and get rid of this stuff because I don't miss any of them.
Right.
Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Not one
something.
Single item.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, now it's just plants.
So, okay. Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Respond to that, and then I have another question.
Oh, I was just going to respond about the boxes. One thing that Sasaki does say, if you're feeling brave, he says if you have boxes packed up
toss
in
them.
Storage and you aren't sure what's in them, maybe you don't need to open them up before you get rid of them.
True.
So
toss. Yeah, I think it's... Well, I'd at least give these items away, because I think some of them were precious to other people.
Sure.
I like the concept. Just chuck them. Trash day, honey. Trash day. Here. Here's the dolly. Here's seven boxes.
Yeah,
trash them.
Exactly.
I like it.
So, all right. So here's my question. To me, this sounds very doable if you are a single person living alone. But do you think this is... realistic? I mean, can it be possible with a family, with kids especially?
Yeah, it's so in the book, Sasaki tries to focus on a range of examples. The photos that he starts off the book with, they start with him, and he is a bachelor living alone, so it's quite easy. You know, you have full control over what you own and what's in your home. He also includes a couple that lives together in a minimal style, and he includes a family of four who do as well. But you're right. I mean, it's absolutely easier to do it as someone living by themselves, and you know you cannot force anyone you're living with to also mm-hmm. become minimal. You know, it's as with everything in a relationship, there's probably going to be a compromise. You of course can control your own possessions. You can control the clothes that you own. You can do a lot of what I call digital minimalism.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's actually, I'm sure that term's out there actually, but sort of decluttering your email subscriptions or apps or even just alerts and notifications that make your phone buzz and distract you throughout the day. And, you know, if you have a large enough space in your home, you can carve out your own sort of minimalist area.
Mm-hmm.
But it absolutely requires a little more compromise when you're living with others. The example I love to bring up whenever anyone says, well, that'd be great, but just try it with a family,
mm-hmm.
Is Leo Babauta, who is a pretty well-known minimalist here in the U.S. He's an author. He runs a blog and website called Zen Habits, and he is the father of six kids.
Oh, my God.
And I always think if he can do it, everyone else can probably at least become slightly more minimalist.
Oh. I'm going to introduce this concept to my older one. He's almost eight. And I think I would love to get his reaction, but yeah, I mean, I'm going to show him the book and yeah, because I think he also should be interested in it, just, you know, from a curiosity perspective.
I definitely think he would. This is your little vegan guy.
I mean,
you know, presented as an animal, an animal help kind of thing.
Yes, exactly.
Moose would be happier.
Yes, exactly. If there wasn't so much clutter. So what was it like to meet Sasaki when he came to New York? That's what I want to know. Like, what was his personality like and all of that?
Yeah, it was really great. I mean, by the time he came to visit, we had worked on the book long enough here that I sort of built up an image of him. You know, he sort of had this almost mythic stature when I actually finally got to talk to him. But he's incredibly down to earth, which is, that comes through in the book as well. His voice is really humble as he's telling his story. I couldn't help but just look at his outfit when we first met, because I met with him three times during his visit in New York, and I was expecting him to be wearing the same thing every time, and I was correct.
That's really funny.
He had these extremely comfortable looking shoes on, had the same gray sweater, and it was kind of, he was able to pull off this look that was very comfortable, but did not look out of place. We went to a very nice Italian restaurant while we were here. He did not look out of place there. Perhaps unsurprisingly, he has really a really strong focus when you're in conversation with him. We spent one day showing him around Brooklyn, and I think in all we were with him for about 8 hours, I realized, after it was over. And it was this kind of one long natural conversation that was punctuated by a couple of meals, but he has this just almost superhuman ability to sort of listen and respond genuinely and come up with interesting questions that move the conversation forward, which was great. There was a curious thing. So he was carrying around a backpack when we were in New York, and I assumed that was just sort of some material that he just needed with him. And my wife and I traveled to Japan last month and met up with him at his home. He's actually since moved from Tokyo to Kyoto, and we met him there. We went out for another, turns out to another 8-hour day, and he brought a backpack with him as we were going around. And I think it was towards the end of the evening, my wife actually asked him, just out of curiosity, what do you have in the backpack, since you kind of live in the city? And he actually keeps a change of clothes and his toiletries in this backpack when he goes out with friends, so that if he's out late, he'll just stay in a hotel room or an Airbnb place or at a friend's place. And so that way, when he goes out in the afternoon, he's truly free to do whatever he wants.
Wow. That's amazing.
That was pretty interesting, and was perhaps a degree more of freedom than I was prepared to experience myself. I don't think I would bring a change of clothes when I went out to lunch with a friend in case I was going to be out until the next day.
Wow.
But it was an interesting thing to think about.
Is he pretty laid back in general? It seems that way.
Yeah, he's very laid back.
Yeah.
Very laid back.
Just kind of go with the flow.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Was there a pinnacle moment in his life that inspired him to do this that you're aware of, aside from just finding his, surroundings messy? Was there a tragedy or something?
Yeah, for him it was, as I understand, it was more of a gradual buildup. You can see in those photos that his apartment was getting sort of unsustainably crowded. And he himself, as he says in the introduction, was pretty unhappy with not just his life, but he became unhappy with who he was, how he was living his life. It was kind of at the trigger for him, I believe, was that he read about Andrew Hyde, who is a minimalist here in the U.S., who at the time lived out of a backpack and traveled around the world.
Wow.
And there was something about that vision that captivated mm-hmm. Sasaki. You know, this idea just sort of took hold, and so we started reading a lot more about other minimalists here in the U.S. and in Japan, and kind of went down. So started to do the process himself of getting rid of
wow.
whatever wasn't essential to him.
This wow. is so inspiring for me. I'm thinking about what I can get rid of literally when I get home. I'm not kidding.
Well, you know what's really great too is I love the way the book's organized in the back section is 55 tips to help you say goodbye to your things, mm-hmm. which is it's such a simple read. And one of the ones I really like, because I always tell this to my clients too, is differentiate between the things you want and the things you need. Mm-hmm. So commonly we yes. identify things, well, I can't get rid of that. I need that.
Absolutely.
It's like, really, will you die without that?
Yeah.
No, that it's not a need. You know,
exactly.
That's how simple defining a need actually
sure.
is. If you're not going to die without it, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a preference. It's a desire. It's a uh-huh. it's a like, but it's not a need.
Yes.
And that's really hard because I think a lot of even parents get like blindsided by their children when they do those little temper tantrums and says, but mommy, I need
yes.
that.
You know, yes.
Oh my God, I don't want to be yeah. a bad parent, not give my child what
of
they
course.
Need. Wait a second. You don't need that.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
just think that you need that. So I think that that's a really critical piece to help people actually really look at some of the things that they hold on to.
Yes.
It's like, really, do you need that? Well, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah, it can be hard. There is, in the book, Sasaki talks about this Japanese game show, which is just wonderfully wacky.
Mm-hmm.
And the premise of the show is that they take a contestant and they put everything that that person owned, including all of their clothing, into a storage container.
Wow.
And I believe every day
uh-huh.
the person is allowed to go to the storage container and take one item.
Oh, wow.
Oh my God.
So the as he tells it in the book, the first day the contestant sort of has picked up a newspaper off the ground and has wrapped it around the private parts, and they go to the storage container and grab a long coat or a robe or something,
right.
or a blanket.
That's
wow.
amazing. Well, that's a really good test to see exactly what you
right. found. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's fabulous.
Well, now that wouldn't be a problem for an exhibitionist, right?
No, it'd
be
exactly.
Like, all right.
Yeah, exactly.
Freedom at last.
That's great. What a cool show. They should bring that to America. That's really interesting.
I love it. Yeah. That is awesome. Okay, we only have a couple minutes left, believe it or not. So are there any poignant statements that you want to make aside from all that you have made and shared with us?
I think we got to well, I hope we did. Hopefully Sasaki's not too angry with me at missing some sort of key point. But I think we got to most everything that sort of he values
mm-hmm.
about minimalism. I mean, I can give you a bit of an update on his own journey.
Yeah,
because
well, I love
actually
that.
most of the info in the author bio that we had when the book came out was out of date by the time he came to visit. And he has, so since the book came out, as I said, he'd moved from Kyoto, from Tokyo to Kyoto, and has actually started to add a little more possessions. He actually was able to get rid of most of his furniture because
okay.
he moved into this sort of living, I guess you'd call it a living working experiment. This is this place in Kyoto called the Institute for International Advanced Studies, and people are invited to do their work there, whatever it may be, and to live there. And so his new apartment, which is still quite small, but it came furnished, so he no longer owns his furniture, which is
wow.
which is a big thing he's
oh, able
to get
great.
Rid of. But he started to add, he had gotten rid of all of his books before, he started to add those back in.
Mm-hmm.
When I spoke to him, he had wanted to buy a guitar, and so he I think he had been thinking about that for maybe 6 months. You know, he likes to think deeply about his
purchases, yeah.
Acquisitions. But
that's funny.
I think his biggest project now, he's for him, the minimizing process was the driving force for him was to increase the freedom that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now exploring the idea of building this sort of truck or caravan that has everything he needs.
Oh,
live in it, and that way he can drive around to wherever he wants to go.
Well, that's fascinating.
That's his latest.
Well, thanks for that little tidbit. Thank you so much, Jeff. You were awesome, and we really appreciate it. And, please, audience, we love you. Get a copy of this book, Goodbye Things by Fumio Sasaki. And today joining us was Jeff Shreve, who is the editor.
Yeah, thank you both so much for having me.
Absolutely.
You were wonderful. Thank you so much. And please tell him how much we love this book.
Love.
Yes. I will. Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to hear it.
Thank you so much again. Take care.
All right. And next week
you too. Have a good day.
Bye-bye. Okay. Next week is up for grabs.
Yes, exactly. Let's just try to signal to you. We'll see. Surprise. All right. Thank you so much.
Love y'all.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.